This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
And welcome back to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket online at WTKA.com. It's time for the MGO Blog Roundtable. You can listen to us, of course, right here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket, but you can watch us on YouTube. You can watch us on Twitter. You can watch us on Facebook. And I believe you can watch us on WTK.com as well. But we're still working on some of the final details, but what a beautiful looking crew. Sam Webb is here along with the crew, Seth Fisher, Brian Cook, and Craig Ross. Sam, everybody is here today. How about that?
There we go. How you guys doing?
Echo, wait, you're a little quiet there, Sam.
I'm a little quiet still. Wait, let me turn myself up.
There you go.
What about now?
Yeah, that's good.
Is that better?
It's the first time that the round table of some sorts has actually been back in months.
I don't know if you've heard, but there's been some things going on.
Yeah, I had to clear all this stuff before I came on.
Gathering of ours, maybe a little bit less relevant.
Right?
Also, we may have lost both Ira and Sam, so we're
you guys
we're loose
know, I can see Sam, but
you can't.
we're having that same issue we had last week.
We are unsupervised, gentlemen.
Okay. Well, I am going to.
So how you been, Craig? How are you feeling about the season?
How do I feel about the season?
Yeah, I mean,
I have absolutely no idea. I have this because last week I thought you were going to be on. This week I wore my Screaming Brian Cook T-shirt.
Yeah, I know.
So I was thinking of coming on like this with the shirt, and then people would think, you know, so I could do two roles. I could put like this and I'd be Brian Cook, and I could be myself with the shirt down. So that was my theory, but it's unnecessary.
The only problem is that you didn't answer the question.
Which is?
How do you feel about the season?
How do I feel about the season? Well, I don't even know how I feel about this one particular game.
Oh yeah, that's
I mean, I don't even know what to make of Minnesota. For example, on your site, and I guess this came through 247, it sounds like maybe Minnesota has some injuries. Daniel Falele and the right.
Injuries or other, right?
Yeah. Yeah, injuries or other. And it sounds like Dunlop, their starting right guard, may have a torn ACL. That's been rumored. Or an ACL issue, and the Falele, however you say his name, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing
That's
it.
That's correct.
He's uncertain, it seems like. So I hunted around for about an hour this morning to see, well, is there anything other than this 247 Ryan Burns report? And I thought if there's something, maybe there'd be some line movement, and it does look like the over went down a half point or a point, but that's maybe weather related, and USA Today isn't reporting any injuries. There's no on the sides. There's no real line movement. It's still Michigan -3. So there's nothing out there that really indicates anything is going on with Minnesota that wasn't going on, say, 10 days ago. So I'm thinking maybe this is just, of course, I tend to be slightly paranoid about these things, but I'm thinking maybe this is just all smoke and mirrors and some sort of a Minnesota game they're trying to play, which I certainly wouldn't think, put beyond PJ Fleck, but, you know, whether it's meaningful or not, I don't know. You still got to go out and play the game and win. I like Michigan's chances to win. But in terms of how the big season goes, you tell me, how good is Joe Milton? I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know either. And so if Joe Milton's a good quarterback and we get pretty good offensive line play out of a brand new offensive line, I like this season a whole lot. So
how about this, guys? As I think we have our audio issue corrected. Okay. How about this? Coming out of the gate,
we're having some technical difficulties.
If you look at the expectation, what your expectation for Joe Milton is for the season, do you expect that to be him in game one? Understanding now that you're also adding to the equation 30-degree weather coming out of the gate, do you think does that impact your expectation for the first game as it relates to Joe Milton specifically?
Oh, Sam, since I think I'm the only one who can hear you, I'll answer that. I think that, you know, whether or not I believe that Michigan was going to be more of a running team to start the season, I think that the running game comes together faster. You got a brand new offensive line. They like those running backs a lot. The recruiting profile of the guys that they have at running, at, you know, on the offensive line now, are they're big dudes who move people. So I was kind of expecting Michigan to come out and run anyway, instead of, you know, throw the ball around with a brand new quarterback. I think it hurts Minnesota more because their whole thing is making you defend the whole field. So they will, you know, they'll run the ball and run the ball and run the ball until you have to, like, give up on defending the pass side of the RPO or bring down a safety and use him to make up for the difference. And then when you don't have a deep safety, then they throw you deep. If that deep pass is not really available to them, it kind of, especially with, like, wind, right? That changes the ball game. And you saw last year against Wisconsin, they just couldn't run their game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. What do you guys know about this new offensive coordinator for Minnesota? What has your research told you about?
I mean, I figure Fleck is really the offensive coordinator, right? So I'm expecting not much change.
Did you feel that way last year? Did you feel that way last year?
Yeah. I thought, like, Shiraka has been Fleck's guy forever, right? So when you have, you know, a Rich Rod, and then you have, you know, that's the kind of – he's running that offense, I figure. The guy they got – he's like the son of Urban Meyer's old offensive coordinator at, like, Utah. And he, not every place he's been, he kind of did worse than the previous teams. So I don't know if they have a great offensive coordinator, but I don't think it matters. I think Fleck's in charge.
What about you, Craig? What do you think your expectations are for the offense, or specifically Joe, which I guess is the key? Mm-hmm. Impacted at all by going into a 30-degree night game?
Yeah, I mean, again, who knows? I mean, last year Michigan came out in the warm weather, and we tried to bubble ball the opposition to death, it seemed like, and it didn't look at all like what the spring practice looked like. It didn't go so well. As the weather got colder, Michigan played better, I felt, on offense. Now, that was a lot, I believe, because of structural changes in the offense or what they tried to do. I think Seth and Brian have talked about that pretty extensively. The in terms of Minnesota, you know, I think there's the offensive coordinator change isn't going to mean much. They still got Bateman, they still got the quarterback Tanner Morgan, and I think they're going to run RPOs up the yin yang because that's what they did last year. Now, one of the things I was curious about was, okay, if you look at Minnesota's schedule last year, it was mostly meatballs. I mean, they started out with 8 crappy teams, and really, it had to have been the easiest schedule in the country. Right. But I thought, okay, how did Tanner Morgan fare in games against real teams? And he was actually remarkably good. I looked at PSU, at Iowa, Wisconsin, and the Auburn game, and he was 67% for 10 yards a pass, a lot of yards. So he actually played very well against the good teams, and that RPO offense worked very well against good teams. There's some things in the Minnesota record from last year that aren't all that impressive. If you look at it game by game, I mean, the beginning of the season is a joke for them. I mean,
not like Steve Clark, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, is that what Steve said?
Oh, yeah, he was not a believer in Minnesota until the Penn State game, where, you know, obviously, you know, they went off that day. Rashad Bateman in particular went off that day. Mm-hmm. They turned my head, surprisingly enough, against a non-defense in Purdue. But to see Tanner Morgan go out there and have, I think he had one incompletion on the day. I was like, even against a bad defense, that's pretty doggone good. But not necessarily to the point of thinking that they were going to possibly win the West. When they beat Penn State like they did, then I started being a believer. Of course, they go on down the stretch. They lose to Iowa. They lose to Wisconsin, I think it was. And they eventually come back in the bowl game. But they didn't wind up being the best team in the West, but still wound up being the best Minnesota team in what, three, four decades or something like that?
Yeah. You have to look at their schedule last year and see what happened to have some context about that Minnesota team. I mean, they came out, they play South Dakota State. They're behind to South Dakota State with 5 minutes left. And, that's not a particularly great team, right? They're down 21-20. They win in the last couple minutes of the game. Fresno State, who was terrible last year, they're behind. They tied them with 28 seconds to go in the game and then win in double overtime. They play Georgia Southern, who isn't any good, and they tie them. They go ahead with to win with 13 seconds to go. They're behind until 13 seconds left. So, I mean, that's not an impressive start. Purdue, yeah, they won 38-31, but Purdue gained well over 400 yards, if my recall's right, in that game. It was like Purdue, who was terrible, incidentally, last year.
Right, but remember, I didn't think that they were going to be heading into the year. I thought it was going to be a breakout campaign. Now, of course, they had injuries impact that.
Yeah, they had injuries. And then, Minnesota then wins the next four, but it's Illinois, Nebraska, Rutgers, and Maryland. So they're going into game nine. They haven't really played anyone, and they haven't been particularly impressive, even with Bateman and with, Tanner Morgan, you know, doing really, really well. I mean, certainly statistically they were, and more than statistically. So now they play PSU. Well, PSU gains over 500 yards against them in that game. They only scored 26 points, but they put up well over 500 yards. But Penn State just completely shoots themselves in the foot over and over. I think they had three or four interceptions in the game. And so, you know, then they lose to Iowa. Okay, they outplayed Iowa. They got killed by Wisconsin about the same as we got killed by Wisconsin. Wisconsin had a 38-3 run in that game. And then somehow they come out and they do have a good win against Auburn in the bowl game, that Auburn team that seemed not particularly motivated to play, and from what I could see. So I think when you look at the big picture of Minnesota's season last year, it's not really all that impressive. They did win games. It reminds me to some extent of Brady Hoke's first year, when Hoke went 11-2, but it seemed like a lot of smoke and mirrors.
I guess from a Michigan perspective, I could see how you would feel that way. Minnesota, man, 11 wins. I don't care. You beat them, beating Illinois and Indiana. That's a big deal for them. So I get why they're excited. Tanner Morgan was not supposed to be the starting quarterback last year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so to see him, I think the guy who they thought was going to be had a foot injury.
Zach Anixted.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. He had a foot injury, and then it wound up being a Tanner Morgan. He comes on, and it's like, okay, well, now we have our guy. They got, you know, two best receivers, arguably, in the league paired together, and they found a way. Now, can they repeat it now that they are sneaking up on people? Now that if you're Michigan, the questions that I have about, you know, the corner position contending with Rashad Bateman. That those notwithstanding, they've had weeks now to prepare for this, and they have film. They know who the threats are and what the strengths are, and they know about Tanner Morgan. You aren't sneaking up on anybody this year if you're Minnesota. So can you replicate last year's success with that understanding and without some key components? Tyler Johnson isn't coming around the corner. And for all of the issues they had defensively last year, Craig, they had Antoine Winfield Jr. out there making plays. I don't know how the hell they're going to replace that guy.
And they're going to have – oh, sorry. Go ahead, Craig.
No, go ahead, Seth.
I was going to say Chris Coughlin also is a major major replacement for them. Like their pass rush this year, they have like an Uche guy kind of come up, but that's it. Like that guy's not on the field. They don't get a whole lot of natural pass rush, and Coughlin kind of fixed that for them a lot last year. So that's one area where they're kind of behind, and they also were a terrible pass protection team last year. Terrible. And if it's true that they're missing out two guys on the offensive line, their offensive line went five deep. So like their left guard is like the backup at both tackle spots. So I don't know, like you said, it could be Fleck, but Fele was out for the bowl game as well. And the guy they put at right tackle, they were lining him up 2 yards, 3 yards in the backfield because it wasn't getting called, and he was still getting just like smoked by Auburn's defensive ends. So I don't think that it's a I don't think that Minnesota is actually as good as they were last year. I don't think they can sneak up on you either. They're very obvious about what they're going to do. When I was reviewing their offense, they pass to the same like four spots on the field every single time. That's why Tanner Morgan looks so locked in. They have the system is built just to like give him those same throws all the time. And it doesn't matter how the guys get there. The timing is still going to be the same and they're still going to be in the same spots. And then the way they stretch your defense, it's really hard to kind of control all of them at the same time. So I don't know about sneaking up's not really the big deal. It's more like, can they pass rush against Michigan? Do they have the athletes at safety if Michigan starts dinking and dunking and using the screen game? And do they have the athletes up front if Michigan just starts rolling them with the run? And I think that's where it's going to come down to.
Do we have Brian Cook? Brian, what do you think? Your view of Minnesota in this game compared to last year?
Well, I mean, one of the things that they did very well last year is that they papered over their inability to protect the passer with just a ton of RPOs. So is Michigan going to be ready to combat those in game one in a really weird season? You can see some holes kind of poking through. You're going to have a new starter at Viper, and that's going to be a really important guy making decisions about whether to come or go on run action. You know, I feel like they're going to be able to move the ball just because they've done so in the past against good teams under this regime. The thing for Minnesota that kind of jumps out as a possible question mark is they're very much a system offense, and their offensive coordinator from last year is now at Penn State. So, you know, we saw at Penn State that Ricky Ronnie took over for Joe Moorhead and was kind of just running the same stuff without doing a whole lot of the innovation that Joe Moorhead was famous for, and they fell off a little bit. It wasn't as dynamic, and I feel like you might have a situation where normally if you have the same offensive coordinator from year to year, he kind of knows that he has to stick and move if he's going to continue to remain effective. And the problem for Minnesota is maybe they don't evolve as much as they need to stay ahead of the curve.
So how about a big picture question that maybe we can apply to this game also? When you look around the country and you see every, you know, league looking like they played Big 12 defense now, is that a sign of the times? Do you think that same thing, that same phenomenon will come to the Big 10? And if so, how do you gauge what's a successful defense? If offenses really are that far ahead, you compound that issue by, you know, having this elongated offseason. You know, what do you think about what do you think about this year's Michigan defense, and what would you sort of classify as success?
For me, success for Michigan's defense is they go four deep at defensive tackle, and I don't care about the results. But, I mean, if you look at this roster, if you look, this is not a peak roster year. So, and it's a weird season. You don't have any idea if you're going to get knocked out of it halfway through because you half your team come down with COVID and they're out for 3 weeks. So, you know, numbers, I feel like are not going to be that relevant this season, but what I want to see is something that gives me some hope that going into next year, Michigan is not going to have holes. Uh-huh. So that means they have a second corner who emerges and is at least decent, and they have some guys coming through at defensive tackle. Now, I do feel like you're going to see kind of the Big 12-ification of college football continue to happen to the Big Ten because, you know, we saw Alabama give up 600 yards to Ole Miss. Uh-huh. That's not natural, right? There's something going on. So whether it's the fact that they haven't been able to hit, they haven't been able to be organized, and they're not as consistent as they usually are defenses around the country, or whether it's offenses continuing to put the hammer down, I think we won't know until 2021. But it's definitely a situation where if Michigan gives up 24 points to Minnesota, I'm going to be like, it's not bad.
Greg?
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly the world of college football and pro football certainly has changed. I just saw a strange thing on screen that says, "Don't call me Noam Chomsky." So funny. In any event, I think a part of it is something that actually Brian started, and he gets some of the blame for this.
What did I do?
Well, you were the first person who publicized the guy from UCal, the economist, who said,
Romer?
Yes, you were the first one that sort of pushed Romer. And if you watch games, teams are going for it on fourth down all the time. And if you recall when Bill Belichick a few years ago went for a fourth and one on his own 27, you would have thought the world ended
I feel like we're about to get lectured on why teams should never punt again.
That is where this is heading.
No, well, I'm not going to go quite that far, even though I sort of believe that. But you watch a game, teams are going, forget about fourth and one, they're going for fourth and two, fourth and threes at midfield. And they're successful a lot. And this has led to a lot more scoring. Also spreading the field. The offenses aren't the old, we're just going to pound it at you from the, you know, when I was, you know, an actual human. And the, and so everything has changed, and you'll see it even in the NFL. I mean, scoring is up. NFL is running their quarterback some. It's a new day, and the defenses haven't caught up at all.
Yeah, so Seth, I mean, kind of a piggyback on that question, and we may have touched on this last week a little bit.
Yeah.
But philosophically, if you feel like that, like, man, defenses just aren't, you know, we aren't just going to be able to stop people. We aren't going to be able to slow people down as much. Do you play more defense with your offense? Do you skew things maybe a little more toward the run to help protect your offense, or do you say if you got the ability to go up and down the field, if you feel like you can light up the scoreboard, just focus on that and let the chips fall where they may on defense?
I mean, killing clock is not going to change the fact that as soon as your offensive possession ends, the other team gets the ball. So that strategy, I think, is like was a misunderstanding from the get go, and teams that the faster you learn that, the faster you figured out the fact that you've got to score more points to win every game. It's never changed. I think that teams should look at it more, especially if like you're a fan watching defense. It should be more about, like, did we win this possession? Did you kick him off the field or not? You know,
Not stats.
Look at, like, because the offenses are going to direct the tempo, and you're going to you're going to do what you can with your possessions. When they're on the field, you know, we've faced Ohio State in the modern era so many times now. We know what it feels like when you get that, you know, you get them in third and long and like, yes, here's an opportunity to finally kick them off the field. Like that's the moments that you need to win in order to like win football games. Now there is no such thing as the lockdown defense anymore because offense is too easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, I just saw a message from Andrew Hefty. He said more zone.
you want a different defensive coordinator, Andrew. I don't think that Don Brown gets credit for the amount of zone that they play. But, you know, even for those that understand how much zone they do play, you do hear people saying that. Do you guys think, knowing who the defensive coordinator is, do you think that could be in the cards where you have, I mean, you know, Vincent Gray has played some football, but he hasn't been the guy. This will be a unique circumstance in the Jim Harbaugh era to not have that proven corner out there. That has to be Vincent Gray. Then you have, you know, absolute uncertainty on the other side, understanding that. Do you think he'd be more inclined to slide in some more zone? I say no. I think just Don Brown is Don Brown is, but I'm curious what you guys think.
Well, I mean, I kind of feel like he did run a lot of zone last year.
Yeah, I know. But even more than that is what I'm saying. More, you understand, and I think you understand more than most people do, that Michigan isn't out there running man-to-man every play. Mm-hmm. It's just this false idea out there to suggest that. But even the amount of man that they played last year, do you think that they could do that without any proven corners, so to speak?
Well, the good thing about the corner group is that they're tall. So when you have tall corners, even if they can't really do a whole lot, you can tell them to play inside leverage and shove everything to the fade, mm-hmm. and then contest it there. So I think there's kind of a base level of we can get away with this at the corner spot that may not be ideal, but could be survivable. And if that's the way you want to play it, that'll work. If you need to start doing some more complicated things, some more two-way things, I think that would be not great, and that would be maybe a situation in which you should lean towards zone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting. Well, you guys, we got a break coming up. You got a chime in on that, Seth and Craig?
Yeah. I for the, most of the season, I think Michigan's going to play man. I think that they brought in two new zone guys who are like, you know, Shoup and Gene Mary are both zone blitzing dudes. So they're going to have more of that, I think, and more interesting blitzes from, from the linebacking position. But against Minnesota specifically, like, you don't want to play zone against an RPO team. Like, that's what they're built to stop, you know, built to attack.
Great. Yeah. My only thought on this, is that in talking to Don Brown, he stresses over and over that what he does what he wants to do with his defenses is create pressure. He wants to create pressure. And if he can get pressure with four guys, he's great. But getting pressure with four guys at almost any level isn't that easy unless you've got very unusual talent. And so I think he's going to blitz, and we may see more zone blitzing this year. I don't know, but I think he's coming after the quarterback because that's in his DNA, and that's what he thinks wins football games. So
gotcha.
Michigan ain't becoming Iowa all of a sudden.
I say, well, yeah, that's the extreme.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I don't even think that we can expect a happy medium. Just to answer Andrew's question, like you want is a different defensive coordinator. If that's that's what you want to see. We got to get to a break. We'll be back on the other side. More MGo Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. And we are back here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. MGo Blog Roundtable. If you want to follow us on our stream, because this is how, you know, we're going to have dual formats, of course, coming to you on the radio here on the airwaves. You can listen to us on the on our stream, our radio stream, but we also are streaming via video on YouTube, on the Michigan Insider YouTube page. We're also on Facebook Live. You can view it on WTK.com, and great to see some of the comments. People are talking about Brian suddenly going out there and being a Mike Gundy fan. Is that true, Brian?
I just like the Pistol Pete.
Okay. So.
Don't know if you know this about Oklahoma State, but for every different part of Oklahoma State, they have a different Pistol Pete. And I'm wearing the accounting Pistol Pete t-shirt because that was the dorkiest one available.
Yeah, I just know Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders.
Thurman Thomas,
yeah. You know, you got some guys that...
Brian Phillips, the great Grantland writer.
So guys, as we, you know, as we talk about the... you know, the expectations for the season, you just raised the question in the break about the Viper position we were talking about in the break. I think that it's mostly Mike Barrett. I think you're going to see them sort of getting Anthony Solomon in there with some time. I know they really like William Apache Mohan and really like the pass rush that he brings to the equation. But I think with the guys who have been in the program, been in the mix a little bit longer, I think they're going to lean on them. That's kind of where I want to go. You know, as you guys look around, I want to know what questions you have, what questions you have about the team. Because for me, my question was really, and I expressed this last week, Brian, so I won't rehash, but mine was about that corner spot, who that other corner would be, if it's not going to be Dax Hill, and it's not going to be, officially, I think in a pinch, if you need him, Dax will go if you need him out there. But other than him, I had heard a lot about DJ Turner. They really, are high on how Jamon Green, his athleticism, and what he's brought to the table. But that's my biggest question mark. If you guys had to single one out, not Joe Milton, too easy, low-hanging fruit. Your biggest question mark right now, Brian Cook.
I want to know what the distribution of targets on offense looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have Sainer Still, who might be on the outside, he might be on the inside. You have Johnson. Like, Bell's going to have the most targets. I think everybody can agree on that. But, like, where does Giles Jackson fit in? How do they break down the running back spot? Is Chris Evans actually going to get some targets in the passing game? It's been 5 years. I've been complaining about this for 5 years. You might have another year of eligibility, so I can hit six.
That's right.
Throw the ball.
Come back next year.
Throw the ball. Throw Chris Evans the ball. Bobo.
I don't think there's any question. Look, this was one of the topics in the offseason that came up on the recruiting trail as they're recruiting Donovan Edwards. You know, teams going at Michigan saying they don't throw to the running back. Why do you want to go there? And the reply being, we threw to our position. We didn't have running backs that we would, that we would use in that pass catching variety. But you had guys, receivers lined up in that R slot. Now you're going to have backs. So you're going to have Chris Evans. And they are really high on Blake Corum. I mean, Chris Evans, he brings you the pass catching ability, the shiftiness, the toughness, the experience. But big play, see a seam, go to distance, they feel like they have that in Blake Corum. So I definitely feel like that's going to be an element in the offense this year.
Yeah, and so we had this talk about speed and space last year. And if you look at a chart of Patterson's attempts, Michigan was one of the most screen-averse teams in the country last year. So you have a new quarterback who's 6'5", who can see over guys, get them the ball without having to arc it too much. You have a ton of guys who you want to see get the ball against a linebacker one-on-one in space. Like, are they going to be able to actually live up to the kind of catchphrase Gattis has for his offense? I think that's a great way to build up Joe Milton with some easy throws early in the game too, is just to get it to someone and watch him get 10 yards after the catch. So I'm really interested to see what the offense looks like for Gattis in year two, because he had kind of a rough start last year. Then he finished the year with, six or seven very good to great game plans at the end of the year. So a guy who came into his own, I think, and hopefully he'll be able to build on that. So, for both this year and the long term, I think that's one of the most important things we can see is Josh Gattis kind of becoming one of the better offensive coordinators in the league.
Seth?
Yeah, just piggyback off of that, because the screen thing is one of the big ones for me. But also, what kind of running game are they going to be? Because last year they started the season trying to run that arc zone package that they'd been running in 2018 a lot, and Shea Patterson was kind of messing up the reads so often that it killed that whole offense. And then around the Illinois Penn State game, they started shifting to more of a pin and pull. And then once they realized that's what they were good at, that's what they ran the rest of the season, and to the point where they could build off of it. And they were running the ball when they couldn't throw the ball downfield. They were moving the ball against Alabama, even with the safeties coming down, because those offensive linemen could do it, right? You had Mike Onwenu and whatnot. The offensive linemen who were doing that are gone. I don't know what the new offensive linemen are good at yet. I really hope that Michigan has an idea, or that Milton is really good at reads or whatever. You have to be good at something and you can build the rest off of it. I have no idea what that is yet. Craig?
Yeah, that's, I mean, a really great thought, Seth. I mean, first of all, how much do you want to run Joe Milton at all? I mean, I don't know, first of all, how adept he is at running read options, number one. Obviously, there were some problems with Shea Patterson, who seemed to have the abstract ability to be a good runner. He was fast, certainly, but it never was very consistent. And two, you only have really two quarterbacks. I mean, how much can you afford to run a quarterback when you've got right now two in your system and you don't start going to Dan Villari, I think his name is, who, you know, may really not be ready. I have a hunch. I don't want to go out on a limb, but I think I have a hunch that might not work out so great, and at least right now. And so, so I have a question of how much you can, you know, and in today's football, one of the reasons why people are scoring points, even in the NFL level, is it's harder to defend when you got an extra guy in the offense, and the extra guy is the quarterback as a runner. And so how that plays out, your question about screens is great, or your, you know, I don't know how many screens we ran last year on the season, maybe five.
I felt like they were, Craig, I felt like that wasn't just a one position issue, back depth, lineman, timing, quarterback accuracy. I felt like all those things were off when it came to the screen game.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Michigan's had a good screen game since they've had A-Train, and that's been a few years, I think. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And the question or the point about interfacing your offense with, well, what do we have? What can the offensive line do? What can Joe Milton do? What risks do we want to take with Joe Milton? Well, you tell me.
What I can tell you how it looked at now. Will it apply to games? I don't know. In practice, they have been able to run the football really well.
Okay.
When it comes to
is that because our defensive tackles are no good? I don't know.
Okay, Sam. That's one way to spin it.
the defense, when they get in pass the tree, they've been able to pin their ears back and get to the quarterback. They both have had their things. But if I had to point to one thing that they do, you know, that I've been feeling like I heard the most about is they run the football well, and they've been able to play off of that. You got a lot of targets, but these shot plays that we've heard about, you know, protecting those. When they get good protection, they got the speed to get down the football field. But you got some defensive ends on this team that should be they should be some of the best in the country. So I guess I'm not that alarmed by hearing that, hey, man, they're able to, if Michigan gets in obvious pass situations, they can pin their ears back and get there. Slightly, you know, I do have some concern about the run defense. I think part of that is scheme. And part of that is schematic and understanding the personnel. I think they do some things with the quick game to keep them off balance. I think you have some veteran backs that are really understanding the offense maybe better than they did at the start of last season. You got a healthy Zach Charbonnet that's playing into the mix. I think there are factors that contribute to it, but right now, the thing that I think that they do the best is run the football. And, you know, the issue that I have, or the question that I have offensively is, you know, how much do you lean on that early versus, hey, man, the ceiling for the offense is dictated by Joe Milton. I mean, you know, you're going to go as far as Joe Milton takes you. He has a special talent to wing this football. I mean, he can make throws that other guys can't make. So how much of that do you go ahead and say he might make some mistakes early? It might not work early, but we know investing in this right now is going to help us. Maybe, you know, certainly in the long term, but maybe even in this game, if we take a few more shots, that's for me. What's the emphasis? Understanding that you probably run the football a little bit better than you did last year, but you got a guy who could push it down the field more or better than you did last year. Should you put more emphasis on that in the way that we saw the emphasis shift with Ohio State's offense, for instance, where they were all a bunch of mesh routes and kind of thing. You saw them shift from that to being a team that got real vertical last year. That's what I want to see if Michigan does that.
Well, shots are actually fairly safe. Like, if you've got a guy in a fly route, worst case scenario, there's an interception 40 yards downfield, right? This isn't a pick six situation very often. And there's a lot of upside that Michigan has because they have a guy who can push it downfield, and they have a couple of the fastest guys in the country now. So it's a situation where I feel like, yeah, you should take shots. Now, are you going to be able to are you going to be able to consistently work over the middle, get Milton to read guys and not throw it in directly into the chests of opposition players? I think that's more of an open question early in the year. But yeah, I mean, put those safeties back on their heels, I think, is a good idea.
I'm right there with you, man.
Especially with Milton, because now we're not talking about, you know, interception 40 yards downfield. Now it's an interception 70 yards downfield. That's a great punt. So that's your worst case. Let's go for it.
It's interesting. The conversations made me think about Minnesota, and that I think their defensive ends are both new. I think their defensive ends graduated. I think their linebackers may be pretty green also. So, I mean, this is a team that Michigan, I would think, would have a reasonable possibility to run against. They weren't a great defense last year. They were okay, but I think they lost six starters, not counting other various vague injury rumors that out of Minnesota. The other thing that I want, I mean, maybe the fastest guy this year in the Big Ten, or certainly he'll compete for it, is Roman Wilson, who's a true freshman, but he actually played in Honolulu, and I'm guessing the weather in Honolulu last year was not exactly the same as the weather Saturday night in Minnesota. So it's going to be a little, you know, I suspect from what I've heard, Wilson will play, but yeah, how he cares, you know.
He does at least have it in his blood. His mom is from St. Ignace.
Okay. So, oh, is that right?
Yeah, so he's, you know, it's somewhere in there. It's somewhere in Roman, right? Being able to deal with the weather. But, you know, let's get to this, Seth, because I do want to grab some of the questions. And this kind of piggybacks on a question that Brian, or an issue that Brian raised earlier in the show, and that's defensive tackle position. And Bryn Keck, if I hope I got your name right, he said, is there any hope for the defensive tackle position this year? I'm curious what you think. If you can go back and look at interior line play this year and give me where your level of optimism is heading into this year about that being better.
I would ask you that question more than me, because it's all about like what's going on in practice with Hinton, right? Is he coming around? I did rewatch over the summer. I watched the Alabama game when Brown did not have Kemp and really just kind of had to make it work with matchsticks and whatnot. Jeter kind of got abused in that. Spate did not stand up, but this is the Alabama offensive line. This is, you know, only Wisconsin, I think, could match, or I guess Ohio State too, can match what they've got on the offensive line. But the way that he attacked it was just, you know, every trick in the book, right? Like, went to the 3-3-5 stuff. We had guys diving into different gaps. But mostly last year, what they did is use their defensive ends as inside players. They had those guys taking B gaps,
right,
which took away some of their ability to pass rush because they're just always going inside on the guards. And, you know, that also, you're still using defensive ends now as your primary defensive guy. Those guys were good at it. You know, Quidipe and Aiden Hutchinson, if you need them to play, you know, three tech, basically, they can both do it. But it's not the best way you can play defense for Michigan. And I think that they might have some more interesting ways of attacking that with Gene Mary and Shoup, because both of them come from zone blitz defenses. But really, it comes down to whether Brown can play the games that he wants to play with his 4-2-5. And that is based off of how good is Hinton right now. Can they get Mozzie Smith up to speed? Is the Jeter talk real, or was that just kind of like, you know, telling him he's good so he doesn't lose hope when he's getting passed by Hinton? Those questions are the ones that need to be answered, because last year they just didn't have it.
Yeah, it's definitely a question mark, largely for some of the reasons, or all the reasons that you laid out. I'm thinking specifically of Donovan Jeter. We have heard Donovan Jeter talk before, so there is a grain of salt aspect to this, but I will say the consistency with which he's mentioned, you know, the persistence of mention of him being disruptive is encouraging. And the thing that I draw from, I know there was a point, you know, maybe early September or so, they were releasing these depth charts every week, right? And so one of those weeks had Jess Spate like ahead of him on a depth chart.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there being some talk. I mean, he's not going to, not from him, just but from people around the program, that he's not going to stick around. Like, hey, man, he's going to be out. This was around the time where guys were leaving anyway. Jalen was leaving. That's his boy. Ambry was out. Nico was out. You know, the talk was, oh, Jeet's probably going to leave too. He didn't. And that stands out to me because here you have some real in the moment adversity that he could have left if he wanted to. That here you have a guy who had injuries the last two seasons that at least impacted the trajectory. Maybe not was the determining factor, but impacted it. And now you're finally healthy. So health is not a concern. Finally, your path to playing time looks clearer. That's not a concern. And then you look at the depth chart. And a guy who's worked his way up from walk on to being in the mix is ahead of you on the depth chart. And I know that was playing into the minds of a lot of people wondering, how's he going to respond to this? And man, he came on at that point. Now, does that apply? Is that applicable to the season? I don't know. I can only offer it as an encouraging sign. And if there's a guy on the inside that I've heard about more, even more so than Chris Hinton, I don't know if that's upsetting or encouraging to you, but Donovan Jeter's name is the name that I've heard the most. And if he can do in practice or in games, what he's done in practice is going to bode really well for Michigan.
Well, one thing that has stood out from the conversations that people have had is that Don Brown was talking about how last year they were in a desperate situation and had to go with three-man lines a bunch. And he's saying that they're eight deep on the defensive line this year, which would be nice. But just the way he's talking is less alarming than it was last year. So I think you might have some guys coming through. I wouldn't put it past Spate to be a decent rotation player. Like, he was a guy who moved from offensive line last year and didn't exactly survive, but was good enough to get out there on the field. Some he's got a shot to improve and be like a Matt Godin type, who's a, mm-hmm. who's a guy who you're not scared to have on the field. He's not going to be a star, but he could be a depth piece, and that's a really important thing at defensive tackle. And then I don't think this is going to happen early in the season, but Mazi Smith is a guy who, you know, we found out this offseason that he was 350 last year, and that is a good news because he's no longer 350, and we have an explanation for why he was not an option last year. So he's a guy who's hugely strong. They're talking about how they've gotten him down to 305, 310. And he's a guy who I think you might be able to get some snaps from four or five games into the season. And it's just depth, just having guys. We don't have to have a star this year. We don't have to have a guy who's
on a rotation.
Yeah. You want the idea that if someone goes out, we don't have to put in a fullback or an offensive lineman at defensive tackle.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. The Don Brown has talked about being eight deep. There's no question about it. And, you know, and he's also talked up Upshaw, Taylor Upshaw, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
And he's also talked up Julius Welchoff. And so how much is just coach talk and how much is not, you never know. But at least it seems like there's a broader range of alternatives this year to go with Carlo and others, Hinton. And so maybe that's right. Maybe there's enough bodies there who are making enough progress so that if you can be okay. And if you can be okay at defensive tackle, this could be, you know, a really good defense, because I agree with, I think it was Brian who said, Arsaf, that the defensive end position should be really good. I mean, I don't know who's got substantially better defensive ends than Aiden Hutchinson and Kwity Paye. I mean, I don't think anyone in the Big Ten does.
Well, I mean, the guy that I heard most about on the defense just as a whole, even more so today, is Aiden Hutchinson. They just, yeah. I mean, he just.
Yeah, I saw your interview with his dad where he was, Bosa, that's reasonable expectation. And I was like, okay.
Right. Hey, you got to know Chris Hutchinson. That's, I mean, he's not that dude to be, you know, to be embellishing. Especially about Aiden. He's more, you know, my son's good, but he has a way to go. And that, he's not like that now. He's like, no, he's on a different level. So,
I mean, I believe it just from what we've seen from him as a true sophomore last year. I think he's going to be an All-American.
Yeah, I do too. Right there with you. He's my pick for team MVP. All right. So guys, when we come back next week, we will have a game to talk about. So with that, let's get your predictions on. We got 60 seconds left, starting with you, Brian Cook, Michigan, Minnesota. Who you got?
Michigan 45, Minnesota 39.
Damn, that's a high scoring game.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about.
All right, Seth Fisher.
Michigan 33-24.
And Craig Ross.
I got Michigan winning this one 28-17.
All right, fellas. Great job as always. You can follow the crew, the MGO Blog Roundtable crew, over on mgoblog.com. In the meantime, we got to part ways. Next time you see me, I will be up at Grand Traverse Resort up in Traverse City and joining my guy, Ira Weintraub. Does a great job on the ones and twos. See you tomorrow, Ira. Rest of you, talk to you tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus State.
Better than us! No!